Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. And today, I am talking about a movie that it means a lot to me. And I'm not just talking strictly because it was a Godzilla movie or anything like that. There were circumstances in my personal life surrounding the release of this film. And this film helped me through a rough time, and I'm going to get to that here momentarily. But before I get started, I would like to encourage you to go give me a rating and or review on whatever podcasting platform you listen to the show on. You know, search algorithms help pick up shows whenever they have higher ratings and reviews and all of that, and I would very much like for whenever people go to search for a kaiju podcast, for mine to be one of the top ones that pops up that people can listen to. And also go give me a like and a follow on Facebook, which is the same profile picture and title as the podcast, Kaiju Carnage, a Godzilla / King Kong podcast. And go give me a follow on Instagram. It's my personal Instagram account, and it is just simply Cal Woodman Kaiju Carnage. And I'm also on Reddit, and you can find me on there, and the title is just simply Kaiju _ Carnage. So, with all of that said, and all of that out of the way, I am talking about today the film Godzilla 2014. Now, If you don't want to hear about my personal issues, I'm not going to go into super detail with it or anything. You know, you could skip ahead about 2 or 3 minutes if you want. But the reason why this film means so much to me is back in 2014, I was in a extremely toxic relationship. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you guys. I was stupid. I allowed this girl to get away with so much and do so much to me and treat me in a certain way because, you know, all in the name of love. I was in love with her, and she would do whatever she wanted, and whatever I would pretty much be like, you know, to the point where I've had enough, she would be able to flip it around, like, oh, I'm going to change, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, and, you know, I would fall for it. And during the time of this movie being released, I was very, very, very suspicious and very certain at this point that she was cheating on me. And spoiler alert, she was. with multiple people, and I confronted her about it. We had a big argument about it. I had been dating her for quite some time. She had children from a prior relationship. I had gotten very, very, very attached to the kids, and so it was a rough situation all the way around. And after this big argument that she and I had, I was just like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not doing anything. I'm just going to stay at the house and sulk, pretty much. And I've got a friend named Richard, and he messaged me and was basically like, hey, let's get everybody together and let's go out. Let's go do something or something like that. And so I told him, like, look, dude, there's problems with me and her. I really don't feel like going out. I'm just, you know, I don't have it in me. And he knew pretty much a lot of the stuff that was going on between me and her. And he calls me after I send him that message, and he's like, you know, to heck with everybody else. We're not going to go hang out with all of them. He said, you and me are hanging out tonight. And I was like, dude, I don't want to. I'm not feeling up to it. And like, you don't know what I'm going through. And he's like, dude, tonight is the opening night for the new Godzilla movie. And he's like, I know you've been excited about this movie, you've been pumped about this movie, and I'm not going to let her be the person that ruins this moment for you. He's like, this is the first Godzilla film that's come out in a decade. Like, you're coming. He said, let's go see Godzilla. And I thought for a minute, and I was like, well, I have been pretty pumped about this movie and I have been waiting for it. And so, I was like, you know what, the heck with it, let's go. So I hopped in the truck and took off towards town. I live in Alexandria now, but at the time I lived in a small town called Hinston, and it's about 40 minutes or so from Alexandria. And so I took off, I'm headed towards town. The whole time I'm driving, I'm sitting there thinking about my relationship and all this stuff. I'm getting more and more upset. I tried calling him at one point, like, dude, I'm just really not up for it. And he's like, nope, you're not. He's like, we're not letting this girl ruin this moment for you. It's not happening. Come on, buddy, let's go. Let's go see Godzilla. And so get there to the theater. We walk in and the movie started. Before the movie started, I was sitting there. He was trying to talk to me and engage in conversation, and I was just, being a heartbroken mess and sitting there not really wanting to talk, but just being real quiet and all that. And then the movie started. And this is a 2-hour film. And for those 2 hours, I was able to forget all of my problems, all of my issues with this girl, and I was just fully enveloped in the new Godzilla movie. And I had a wonderful time after it was over. I was smiling, I was laughing. Me and Richard sat there because he's a big kaiju fan as well. And we stayed out in the parking lot way longer after the movie was over and talked about the movie, talked about our favorite Godzilla movies, our favorite kaiju that's not related to Godzilla. We just had a really good nerd out session, and I went back home, and yeah, on the drive back, she was back on my mind again. But this movie had gotten me to such a place to where, like, yeah, it bummed me out that I was going through all of that with her. But at the same time, I'm like, I just told myself, oh, man, today was a good day. So, yeah, I'm very, very fond of Godzilla 2014 because it helped me, even just for a night, it helped me get through a very tough time that I was going through. I know there's a lot of people that complain about this movie, and I'm going to get into the complaints later on in the episode, but I've got nothing but love for this movie. I adore it. I've got nothing but positive things to say about it. I have very, very, very little to no complaints whenever it comes to this movie. Whenever me and my girlfriend had first started dating, not the one before, the one I'm currently with now. She's my fiance now, by the way. When we had first started dating, we wanted to have like a movie night and all that kind of stuff. We had only been living together like maybe not even a week. And she heard me talking about Godzilla and all that kind of stuff, and she's like, I think I'd like to try one out. I'd like to try out a Godzilla movie. But I know that she's not the super biggest fan of watching older films and all of that kind of stuff. So I picked Godzilla 2014. I'm like, this is it. This is gonna be your introduction to Godzilla, to the world of kaiju and all of that. And we sat there, we watched the movie. She really, really enjoyed it. She's now seen all the films in the MonsterVerse. She really enjoyed this one, 2014. She liked Kong Skull Island that came out in 2017. King of the Monsters, she was kind of, she can kind of take or leave. And she pretty well enjoyed Godzilla versus Kong. So, I kind of halfway turned her into a kaiju fan Godzilla 2014. But alrighty, guys, that pretty much does it for all of that. Sorry to have bored you or anything. I know you guys are here to just listen to me talk about Godzilla and not my personal past problems that I've had with past relationships, but I just wanted to share that that this movie does indeed mean a lot to me, not just in the sense that it's a Godzilla film or a kaiju film or the first Godzilla film in 10 years or anything. Like, this film, you know, even if it was just for 2 hours, pulled me out of a very rough, very dark headspace that I was in. And so I just wanted to share that. So with all of that aside, let's jump right into the film. So the movie was directed by Gareth Edwards. Like, I know a lot of people have certain opinions about Gareth Edwards. I personally don't have much of an issue with him. I think he's a very capable director. I think he's a wonderful, like, many of the scenes and shots that he does in his movies are extremely memorable to me. Specifically in Godzilla 2014. Like, I think this is easily my favorite film that he's done. And there are so many memorable shots and scenes. And, like, it's a beautiful movie. The way he handled everything. The way he led up to the big reveal for Godzilla, which he openly admitted he based the reveal of Godzilla on Jaws. Like, he didn't want to just show the monster very quickly or very early on. He wanted to build suspense. He wanted to make people wait so that whenever Godzilla did make his big appearance, it would just make people be like, finally, there he is, and just be in awe of him actually showing up. And the entire scene of Godzilla making his first appearance in this movie is one of my favorite scenes of all time. Like, I love it. Like, I think it was handled wonderfully, and yeah, he did a very good job leading up to the big appearance of Godzilla. This is the first film in the Monsterverse. Now, the Monsterverse, I'm sure if you're listening to a kaiju podcast, you know what the Monsterverse is. But on the off chance you don't, the Monsterverse is just the name of the shared universe that Legendary and Warner Brothers has with this kaiju franchise that they have. And currently there are only 4 entries as far as films are concerned: Godzilla 2014, Kong, Skull Island, Godzilla King of the Monsters, and Godzilla vs. Kong. There are novelizations that have been done of every single one of the films, all 4 of them. I have them. I've read them all. There are prequel graphic novels. There are sequel graphic novels. There are graphic novels that take place in between 2 movies. Like, I would, like, if you're wanting more Monsterverse stuff, and you just, you know, you can't deal with there only being 4 movies right now, I definitely recommend going and checking out the expanded universe that has been created for the Monsterverse, with the graphic novels, comic books, and all that kind of stuff, because there's some good stories out there. Now, and this is the first film in the Monsterverse, but it's the second American-produced Godzilla film, the first being the infamous 1998 Godzilla film, which is only titled Godzilla here in the States, by the way. Toho actually made it to where here recently any new productions of DVDs and all that kind of stuff, in the rest of the world, it is simply called Zilla, because Toho officially made that particular kaiju an official kaiju in the Toho universe, and its name is just simply Zilla. So there's that. So Toho doesn't even consider that a Godzilla film anymore. So, you know, it is what it is. but this is the second American Godzilla-produced film. Now, pretty much the lead-up to this movie, there was a lot of building, there was a lot of prep, and we almost got an entirely different movie than what we actually ended up with. After Godzilla Final Wars came out in 2004, Godzilla Final Wars came out. That movie was the celebration of 50 years of Godzilla, because 2004 was the 50th anniversary of the original 1954 film. And after that film came out, Toho pretty much decided that they were not going to produce any new Godzilla movies for 10 years. This is not out of the ordinary. They've done it before. After the Showa era ended, you know, the Showa era ended in like 1974, 75, something like that. The next Godzilla film didn't come out until 1984. After the Heisei era began, the final film in that franchise was Godzilla vs. Destoroyah, which came out in 1995, I believe. They were not going to produce any more movies for 10 years until the 98 Godzilla came out, and it was received so poorly from fans and all that that they decided to move up the timetable, basically saying we have to fix the mess that the 1998 Godzilla created. And so they went on ahead and sped up production and came up with Godzilla 2000. It's called Godzilla 2000, but it actually came out in 1999 in Japan. So it definitely is not out of the ordinary for Toho to get done with an era of Godzilla films and then say, okay, we're done for a little while. And, you know, they do this for a little while for multiple reasons. During the Showa era, they just kept throwing Godzilla movies out there so much to where, like, I mean, it got to the point to where they were producing a Godzilla film like every year or every other year. So people got burnt out. They got tired. It was just like, oh, here's the next Godzilla film, you know, and all. And they just got to where they're like, nah, we don't care. And so they decide to wait so that people don't get tired of seeing Godzilla over and over and over again. Like, giving people a break so that whenever the next one comes out, they'll be like, okay, it's finally time for the next Godzilla film. Man, it's been 10 years and all that. So that's why they decided to do that. Now, all of that happened in 2004. So with all of that said, in August of 2004, a man that some of you might recognize, I don't think I've ever mentioned him on the podcast, but you more diehard fans will probably recognize him. His name is Yoshimitsu Banno. And this man was the director and co-writer of Godzilla vs. Hedorah that came out in 1971. Godzilla vs. Hedorah is a fan favorite. It deals with Godzilla going up against Hedorah, or aka the Smog Monster. Has a very like anti-pollution message. It wasn't well received at the time of its release, but since it's come out, it's one of the most iconic Godzilla films, not just of the Showa era, but of the franchise period. Like, there's a lot of people that have a lot of love for Godzilla vs. Hedorah. I am one of those individuals, and I'll get more into that later on. So, Yoshimitsu Banno, I'm just going to call him Banno from here on out, he announced that he secured the rights from Toho to be able to produce a short film, and he wanted it to be a remake of Godzilla vs. Hedorah. He was very proud of Godzilla vs. Hedorah, and he always wanted to do a sequel or do more with the Smog Monster because he wanted to get his pollution message, you know, out there and all of that kind of stuff. So he was pretty pumped and pretty excited to actually be able to start working on this. And the name of the film, it was going to be in 3D. The name of the film was called Godzilla 3D to the Max. And that's just the title that it was. And so he starts getting ready. Now, I say it's a short film. Unfortunately, short film covers like a wide variety of run times. I mean, there are films out there that are considered short films, and they're only a minute and a half long. There are some that are 20 minutes long. There are some that's about 30 or 40 minutes long. If it doesn't hit like full feature length standards, which feature length has increased over time. That's why, like, some movies that you watch that were made back in the 30s or the 40s or anything like that, the movie may only be an hour long, sometimes under an hour, 55 minutes or something like that. Back then, that was a feature length film. That was just how long, you know, they considered a full-fledged film to be. Whereas nowadays, it's pretty average, pretty common for your average film to be about 2 hours. And to me, 2 hours is about, you know, that's about the perfect length for a movie. I think you can get a lot of stuff across in 2 hours, to the point to where sometimes I'll go to watch a new movie that came out in like 2020, 2019, something like that. And when I see the runtime and it's like, oh, an hour and 20 minutes, I'm like, what? You know, I'm like, this is going to be over in no time. But so I don't exactly know how long Bano's short film was going to be that he wanted to make. To my knowledge, it's never actually been stated how long it was going to be. I have searched, I have looked, but it's not, I can't find anything. So it was going to be a remake of Godzilla vs. Hedorah. This man goes and employs a full team. So he's like fully invested in this. He's wanting it to be as good as he can possibly get it. Like, he has cinematographers, he's got, you know, makeup artists, he's got the whole shebang. This is not just a simple independent production of like a handful of people that's going to try and make this short film. Like, he wanted this to be as professional and well-received as it possibly could. And so he went out and got a whole slew of people. This all took place over about a 2-year time period. So in 2006, just with some of the people, some of the producers that he got involved, they started talking, they started figuring like, well, should it just be a short film? I mean, we've got so many people involved in this, and we're obviously very passionate about this. Like, let's actually make this into a movie, like a full-fledged movie. So they actually go to Toho and start renegotiating the contract that they had signed for the movie. And lo and behold, Toho, even though they said they would not produce another Godzilla film for a decade, gave them the okay. Said, all right, guys, yeah, sure. Sounds good. I think you guys will do pretty well with it, and go right ahead. And so, boom. The short film that was going to be a remake of Godzilla vs. Hedorah is now going to be a full feature-length film. And so, they're like, okay, well now this is going to be on a much larger scale of things. We have to go find like an actual legit production company, because Toho was not going to produce it. They said they were not going to produce it, and so they're not. So Bano had to actually go find another production company to fund him the money so that he can make his dream project. And all that happened in 2006. In 2007, there was a company that was called Kerner Optical. And they were a production company. I say were because they went defunct in 2011, I believe. Like, they no longer exist. And honestly, it was because of things like this that they pull with this movie. They join the production. Like, yeah, we will helm the production of this film. We will handle, you know, the budget and all of that kind of stuff. They don't get far into making the movie at all and Kerner Optical, they were already having financial problems. So they shouldn't have even agreed to do the movie, but they did. And whenever their financial problems started snowballing and getting even worse, they threatened to just flat out shut down production and just be like, we're done. We're not going to do this movie or anything. So they start shopping around for another production company. Like, no, like, we want to make this movie. We want to get this movie out there and all of that. So they start shopping around for another production company, and enter Legendary Pictures. Legendary Pictures is the studio that's teamed up with Warner Brothers to do all of the MonsterVerse films that's been done so far. And so they get in contact with Legendary Pictures and they start negotiating, they start talking and all of that kind of stuff. And there was a lull of about 3 years where nothing new really happened with the movie. But in 2010, Legendary officially announced its acquisition of the Godzilla rights to do Godzilla films. And so, just like that, you know, Godzilla is coming back for an American production, and they're going to try and correct the mistakes that were made with the 1998 film. So Legendary announces the acquisition, Warner Brothers gets involved, and they announce that the film is going to be a reboot. And now that Warner Brothers is involved, little fun fact, this is actually going to be the first Warner Brothers produced Godzilla film since their Americanized version of Godzilla Raids Again back in the 50s that they titled Gigantus the Fire Monster, which is a terrible, terrible movie. Like, the Japanese version of Godzilla Raids Again is, I don't say it's fantastic. It's pretty good. I don't think it really lived up to the hype that the original film had created. But guys, if you watch the Americanized version, Gigantus the Fire Monster, and then you turn around and watch the original Japanese version of Godzilla Raids Again, Godzilla Raids Again is going to look like an Academy Award winning masterpiece compared to the garbage that was Gigantus the Fire Monster. With all of that said, disclosure, that is my opinion and my opinion alone. So, you know, don't sue me for Warner Brothers for bad-mouthing one of your properties. So, yeah, it's going to be a reboot. You know, they decided to abandon the whole it being a remake of Godzilla versus Hedorah and all of that, which is, it's kind of sad that that happened, because Bano, you know, he was so passionate about wanting to do a remake for Godzilla versus Hedorah and get things, you know, get the ball rolling, because he loved that movie. You know, if you ask any director, writer, or anything that's in the movie making business, and you ask them, what is your baby? What is the movie that means the most to you? What is the one that you are most passionate about and everything? Every single writer and or director is going to have one movie that stands above all, to where they're like, you know, oh, I'm passionate about all the movies I've made, but man, that one in particular, that was my masterpiece, you know, and all that kind of stuff. There's always one that they're most proud about. And for Bano, Godzilla vs. Hedorah was that film. And so it pretty much gets canned that it's not going to be a remake. It's going to be a full-on reboot. But they asked Bano if he would still be on as a producer for the film. And Bano agreed. And probably the saddest thing over the whole thing is that, You know, he was on as a producer. The film came out in 2014. In 2017, Bano had gone on record to state that he still had full intentions to try and remake Godzilla versus Hedorah. And, you know, because he loved it so much and was so passionate about it. And then not very long after that, he passed away. So it's always going to be sad and tragic to me that he had his chance to do his remake that he wanted so badly, and it ended up getting turned into the 2014 Godzilla that we ended up getting. And he was still adamant about one day, I'm gonna remake my movie, and I'm gonna, you know, with updated special effects and put so much more love, care, and effort into it, and just bring it back and show the world once again my vision and all of that. And he very sadly passed away before he was able to realize any of that. But you know, it lives on. You know, I'm gonna pause just momentarily with Godzilla 2014, but Godzilla versus Hedorah is. It's a fan favorite, like I said, very, very popular, to the point to where Toho, if you go to YouTube, you can find it. At the time of this recording, I'm talking like maybe only 3, 4 days ago, Toho officially released a short film. It's very short. It's only like 3 or 4 minutes long, maybe 5 minutes long. I don't know. I've watched it several times since it's been released because I love it. To where it is Millennium Godzilla, the Godzilla from Final Wars, and he's going up against Hedorah. They have, you know, about a 2, 3 minute fight. I thought it was great. I thought it was wonderful the way that they actually shot the battle, the music that was going along with it, and everything. It was very, very well done. So even though Bano is no longer with us, and he wanted to remake his movie, here we are in 2021, and Toho officially releases a brand new Godzilla versus Hedorah short film. So, you know, the legacy of Godzilla versus Hedorah lives on. And, you know, I'm not sure if Bano knew to the full extent how many fans loved his movie. I'm one of them, but you know, I like to think that I hope that he did, that he knew. But you know, I mean, there's nothing that can be done about it now because he's no longer with us. But you know, I don't know. Like, it's just it makes me happy that to know that he was so passionate about it, and the movie just it lives on. And it's not going to die anytime soon. I mean, if you like, the short film just got released. Toho has released all kinds of like new Bandai figures, SH Monster Arts figures for Hedorah that's going to be coming. Like, you know, it lives on. The legacy of Godzilla versus Hedorah will live on, and that brings me comfort. Now, with all of that said, back to 2014 Godzilla. I apologize for going down the rabbit hole there, folks, but anyone who's listened to more than one of my episodes knows that that's a pretty common thing. It's an issue. And if you think I do it by myself, wait until you if you listen to any of my other podcast episodes, well, not my episodes, but whenever I guest on Kid Kong at the Movies or Caleb's Kung Fu Cinema. Yeah, we will definitely go down the rabbit hole, and I'm just now realizing I went down the rabbit hole again by talking about that. So moving on, doggone it. So where was I? Yes, it's gonna be a reboot. First Warner Brothers produced Godzilla film since Gigantus the Fire Monster, and the release date was announced that they wanted the movie to actually be released in 2012. And it was like they were very, very dead set on we are not going to make the same mistakes that were made during the 1998 Godzilla film. Most importantly, He is not going to only deal with the military. He is not going to run from the military like he is scared of them. And he will absolutely battle at least two other kaiju in this film. like they would be original, brand new kaiju that had not been seen before. Because at the time, even though Legendary had gotten the rights to Godzilla, they did not yet have the rights to other Toho properties. That did not happen until after this film was released. And it did so well that Toho was like, by all means, use some of our other properties. And then for 2019's Godzilla King of the Monsters, that's whenever they acquired Rodan, Mothra, and King Ghidorah. And they went from there. So they had to come up with original kaiju to be in this movie, and they created the Mutos, which, I'm not gonna lie, guys, I'm a big fan of the Mutos. I like the way they look, I like the way they act, I like the concept of them. One of my favorite things about them, and it's actually kind of sad that this is about them, is that unlike other Godzilla films, like, they're not necessarily villains. Like, when you watch other Godzilla films, you know, there's motive, usually, behind the kaiju that Godzilla's going up against. It's, well, aliens sent this kaiju and he's under mind control, or Ghidorah, just an alien that comes from the sky and, you know, he's just bent on destroying things and all that kind of stuff. Like, there's just, most of the monsters that he goes up against is a straight-up villain later on in the franchise. The Mutos, on the other hand, is like, dude, they were just animals. They just woke up, and they're just trying to live their life. They're just trying to have their babies. And in comes Godzilla, you know, where there's a rivalry between their two species. And he's like, I'll be doggone if you're going to be happy and have your babies. I'm going to wipe you out. And boy, he takes them out in two epic fashions in this movie. And I'm not going to touch on that later. I'm going to touch on that now. Whenever he kills the male Muto, the one that flies, the smaller one. I remember being in theaters, and there were multiple people in that theater that were diehard Godzilla fans, and whenever it's flying around, making its circle, and Godzilla's just watching it, and whenever it swoops in to make the attack, and Godzilla just whips around with his tail, and smashes it into that building, the whole theater was like, oh, you know, like that whenever he did it. It was a cool moment, it was awesome, I enjoyed it. And then, you know, whenever he kills the female in just this brutal, like, only in a way that the freaking King of the Monsters could kill another kaiju. Pry its mouth open and fire his atomic breath straight down her throat. Like, God, it was brutal, it was awesome. Like, it was great. I mean, I don't have anything else to say about it, really. I mean, the way he defeats the Mutos in this movie was just fantastic. And I've got nothing negative to say about that. So, they decided he was going to battle two other kaiju. In 2011, which is just a year before the projected release date, because they wanted it to be released in 2012... they announced Gareth Edwards as the director. Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to find out that 2012 release date ain't gonna happen. It's just not. Like, you know, I mean, back in the day, yeah, it would have been nothing to produce a movie in under a year. I mean, Toho would do it all the time with their Godzilla films. But with how movies are done now, like, you know, to hire a director in 2011... and then say, we want the movie complete, done, released, and in theaters a year from now. In 2012, like, I mean, more power to you, I suppose. So, obviously, they fall behind schedule. And because they're falling behind schedule, Gareth Edwards directs a short teaser video to release just to give the people something so that they would be able to, you know, be like, okay, like, look, we are working, it's coming, and all of that. And the short teaser video is that one of the dialogue that says, now I am become death, and all of that kind of stuff. You see this giant centipede that didn't even make an appearance in the movie. I would have loved to have seen something dealing with that centipede in the movie. But, and all that. And then there's an explosion. You see all of the dust and the smoke. And you can barely make out Godzilla's face. And you hear his roar. And that was the teaser video. And guys, I'm not going to lie to you. That teaser video pretty much worked as the announcement of the movie for me. Like, I wasn't, in 2012, I'm not going to say I wasn't as big into movies, but I wasn't near as big into keeping up with what new movies were coming out, you know, knowing what movies were being planned out like 3 or 4 years in advance. I just didn't keep up with it. And so a lot of times whenever a new movie would start to come out, the only way, I didn't mess with Facebook all that much back then. And I think I'd only been on Facebook for like 2 years at the time. I think I joined Facebook in 2010. So yeah, I just wasn't super involved in all of that at the time. And so whenever a new movie would come out, about the only way I would usually find out about it was by the time it was almost completely said and done, and there would be ads on TV, like TV spots. Or if I went to the theater to watch a movie and they had the trailer for a movie attached. And no joke, I knew that Pacific Rim was coming out pretty soon. And I was super pumped about Pacific Rim. And, you know, you can listen to my Pacific Rim episode to hear me fanboy out about all of that stuff concerning Pacific Rim. But I was very pumped. I was very excited. And I remember, like, looking stuff up on Pacific Rim. And I was on YouTube. And I saw the teaser video that was on there. I had no idea what it was. I saw the body of the centipede, and I was like, what the heck is this? So I click on it, see what it is, and I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm just like, okay, I don't know what this is. Is this like a post-apocalyptic giant monster movie, you know, and all that kind of stuff? And then whenever that, it showed the dust, like the dust cloud going up and all of that, and we see, just barely see Godzilla's face, and he roars, I about dropped my phone. Like, I remember just being like, oh my God, like, what did I just witness? You know, like, I immediately, I was at my brother's house. I was in the front room. He was in the back room. I took off running, just screaming like, Rob, you're not going to believe what I just watched. And, you know, I started it over, didn't tell him anything about it or anything. I was like, just watch this. He's like, what is it? And I was like, you'll see. You'll see at the end. Just watch this. And so he watched it, see Godzilla at the end, and he looks at me, big old smile on his face. He's like, excellent. And we're like, yeah. And so, yeah, this teaser video is what pretty much let me know that the movie was even being made. So thank you, Gareth Edwards, for the teaser video that you made. So now they've got the director, they've got everything ready for the movie, so now it's time to actually write the script. This film went through multiple script rewrites and everything. I don't know what the film, other than, you know, they decided it wasn't going to be a remake of Godzilla vs. Hedorah, but I don't know, whenever they first said, okay, it's going to be a reboot, if, like, what the initial story was going to be, like, how it all got changed. I just know that there were multiple rewrites with the film, and that's pretty much all I know. Like, so there was a man by the name of David Callahan, and he was brought on as the writer for the film, and he wanted to take it very, very seriously, because everyone involved, you know, what's looming over the entire production of this movie is the legacy of the 1998 Godzilla film. And nobody wants to make a film that is on par with or worse than the 1998 Godzilla film. Everyone involved is like, we are going to do Godzilla justice. We are going to make a wonderful movie. We are going to make Toho happy. We're going to make the fans happy. Like, we are going to nail this. So he researches Godzilla's entire history. David Callahan does. And looks up how Godzilla acted in the Showa era, the Heisei era, the Millennium era. Like, just he fully enveloped himself on the history of Godzilla. He also studied animal behavior. He studied natural disasters and what the government response to natural disasters are. Because in most Godzilla films, it'd be like, okay, you know, this evil kaiju shows up. He's tearing up a city. Then Godzilla shows up. I'm going to save the city. And while trying to save the city, he wrecks even more of the city. You know, and we never really get to see a whole lot of what the government's response to that was. What is, you know, the people that are being displaced from their homes being destroyed. The thousands of people that are in those buildings that got killed and all of that kind of stuff. So he wanted to look up all of that kind of stuff to see, like, what the response was from the government, how natural disasters are handled, and all of that kind of stuff. And so he writes the script. And so then they say, well, we want to rewrite, because it was just a first draft. You know, there no one ever goes, unless it's just a terrible movie, no one ever just completely okays a script on the very first draft. Like, it just doesn't happen. There's always some tweaking that happens. So David S. Goyer was brought on to do a rewrite for the script. He didn't work on it very long. In his own words, he only worked on it for 3 or 4 weeks and didn't even get all the way through the script. And he received no credit at all for, no writing credit for the movie at all. Now then enter Max Borenstein. Borenstein. We'll say Borenstein. How about that? So Max Borenstein, he comes in to continue working where David S. Goyer had left off. Now, Max, he pretty much stays involved with the MonsterVerse from here on out. Like, he, you know, he helps develop stories and, you know, ideas, like concepts and all that kind of stuff. He pretty much stays attached to the MonsterVerse ever since he was brought on to finish the script that David S. Goyer began. But now, with that said, then, after Max finished the script, they hire a man by the name of Drew Pierce, and they want him to kind of polish up the script a little bit. And so he polishes it up, he works on a few more little details here and there, and then they hire a man by the name of Frank Darabont to do the final rewrite of the script. And whenever he gets involved, like, he works out the very small details, like how Godzilla's going to be, what the character development for the characters are going to be, and all of that. And he walked in saying that he wanted to return Godzilla to actually being a terrifying force of nature. Not only doing that, but he wanted to have compelling human drama. Because let's be honest here, probably the biggest complaint about the Godzilla franchise as a whole is that people go to a Godzilla film to see Godzilla. But everyone wants to have a little side story with human drama and all of that going on. The only problem is, so a lot of times that human story is complete and total garbage. It's boring. Like, you sit there and you're just like, get past all this. I don't care what they're talking about. I don't care what they're doing. I just want to see the kaiju. And so Frank decided he wanted to change that. So he really focused on the emotional aspect and character development of the script. And I think This is just my personal opinion. I think he did a wonderful job. This movie stands out to me in the fashion of, I will tell anybody that I was completely invested in what was going on with the human characters. I just was. Like, that is a very rare thing for a Godzilla film for me. It just does not happen all that often. But I was fully invested in the human drama that was going on in this movie. And so, now they have the script, and they're sitting there going like, okay, so now what's, one thing that they really wanted to address was Gareth Edwards fully believed that it would have been impossible for Godzilla to have just completely hidden from humanity for as long as he did and then just pop up in 2014. And everyone's like, oh my God, look at this thing that none of us had any idea existed. You know, like, so he decided to come up with the backstory of Godzilla has been around. He's been around since the 50s, and that the nuclear tests that the Americans did in the 50s was an attempt to kill Godzilla. And it obviously did not work out all that well. And so that's where that concept came up with, where that concept came from. He also decided that he wanted to do a Jaws-style reveal for Godzilla. Like, he didn't want to just show him at the beginning of the movie and like, okay, here he is, and then start showing him Rampage and all of that. A lot of times that works for movies. It worked for Kong Skull Island. Like, he shows up very, very quickly in the beginning of the movie, and then there's about 15 or 20 minutes later, you know, he full-on shows up again, and then he's just sprinkled in throughout the movie. And there are lots of people that consider Kong Skull Island to be still the strongest entry of the MonsterVerse, which is debatable. Don't get me wrong. I really like the movie, but I, so far, my personal favorite, I would say, is Godzilla vs. Kong. But, so he wanted to have a Jaws style to where, like, you see bits and pieces of him. You see his dorsal fins, you see, you know, him, like, his tail whipping around and all of that kind of stuff. Like, you don't get to actually fully see him until about an hour into the movie. And I think the suspense and build-up worked out great for how it all, well, how it all worked out. Toho gave Warner Brothers and Legendary two conditions for the movie. Like, to be made. One, they wanted him to be born of nuclear energy, so pretty much them trying to kill him in the 50s with the nuclear tests. Like, obviously Godzilla was already around, but now did the nuclear tests make him more powerful? Like, you know, I mean, I'm not sure. But, so that pretty much checked off that box, and they also wanted a chunk of the movie to be set in Japan. Which, as if you've seen the movie, you would know that roughly the first 20 to 25 minutes, probably even 30 minutes, the movie is, like, set in Japan. So, that checked that box. Now, for the design of Godzilla. The animators that were coming up with Godzilla, they wanted him to be true to the Toho version. They did not want this just to, you know, because, you know, Zilla in 98, he was so different. He wasn't Godzilla. Like, one of the people attached to this movie flat out said he's never understood why they did that with the 98 Godzilla, because, like, why change something to the point to where it's unrecognizable and entirely different? Like, that's not a remake or anything like that. That's just a completely, you know, reimagining. And so they wanted this to be a version of Godzilla that was true to the Toho version. They made him 350 feet tall, which at the time that this movie was made was the largest Godzilla that had been made yet. And whenever they was coming up with like things for his facial features and stuff like that, they used bears, dogs, and eagles to come up with his facial features. And then for his body, they also used bears, Komodo dragons, lizards, lions, and wolves. And they kind of just got, you know, movements, features, and things like that from all of these animals and put them into Godzilla to give him more of a natural kind of look. Because while Suitmation is absolutely what made Godzilla famous, and it's traditional for it to be Suitmation and all of that in a Godzilla film, they wanted Godzilla to look natural in this film, like he was actually a part of nature. Like, you know, he's the wrath of nature. You don't want to just look at the old Godzilla movies, kind of copy those movements, because then you're basically just going to have a CGI version of a guy in a costume. And so they really looked towards nature and animals and things like that so that they could make him look as natural as possible. And they also used all of these animals to pretty much come up with like what his underlying bone structure would look like, the fat, the muscle structure, and everything like that. Like, they wanted to make him look as accurate as a 350-pound monster would be, basically. Now, for the roar, like, everyone knows Godzilla's roar. Everyone knows the roar that Godzilla has in this movie where he roars at the female Muto and he holds it for like six, seven seconds, something like that. It's pretty intense. Like, especially whenever I was in the theater and he does that roar, and dude, that volume was like, gah, I felt like I was right in front of Godzilla getting roared at, and it was pretty cool. Coming up with the roar took 6 months for them to try and get it right, and they came up with 50 different versions of the roar. Whenever they finally got to the point to where they're like, okay, we think we got it, we want to test it out, but they wanted to test it out with maximum volume. So these guys went to a back lot on Warner Brothers, one of the back lots for Warner Brothers where they shoot films, hooked this thing up to like one of the most massive speakers that they could find, cranked the volume to 11, and then hit play. And Godzilla roared, and by personal accounts, that roar was so loud that it could be heard from 3 miles away. Think about that for a minute. That if you don't even know that they're working on a Godzilla film and you're in your backyard watering the flowers or something like that, and then a mile up the road, you hear a legit Godzilla roar. That's going to make you look around. You know, you're like, oh boy, what in the world's going on now? And so I can just imagine some people that was just, like I said, just out there in their backyard working in their garden or playing catch with their son or something like that. And then you just hear this massive Godzilla roar, you know, like, man, I wish I could have been there to experience it. I really wish I could have. It would have been awesome. Now, very briefly back to the Mutos. The Mutos took over a year to design the way that they look, the way that they move and everything. And the main influences that they had were from some of the dinosaurs from Jurassic Park, Alien, King Kong, and probably what I think influenced them the most, especially in the face, was Starship Troopers, because they look an awful lot like the bugs in Starship Troopers. If you've ever seen that movie, if you haven't, watch it. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. Now, as far as casting is concerned, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was actually almost cast in the lead role of this movie. He turned it down. And some of the other main guys that were looked at to play Ford in the film were Henry Cavill, Scoot McNairy, and Caleb Landry Jones. And they didn't land any of them. And then, but Legendary themselves was interested in trying to get Aaron Taylor Johnson to take the role, and he ends up getting it. because he is going to be in the military, and they wanted him to be, you know, they wanted it to be realistic, and they wanted him to, you know, actually look like he was part of the military. Prior to production, they actually sent him through a miniature boot camp with actual military personnel so that he would know how to talk, know how to move, know how he needs to speak to superior officers and all of that kind of stuff. So he went through just a very small, like, makeshift military training to prepare for the film. Now, you know, and then it wasn't long after that Elizabeth Olsen was able to join the cast. Bryan Cranston is in the film, you know, notoriously, because a lot of people are upset that he had as little screen time as he did, and I'll get to that momentarily. But they wanted him for star power, also just because he was a good actor. And he at first wasn't going to do it. He was just like, no, I don't think so. I really don't think I want to do this. But they sent him a script, was basically like, please, you know, do this and all this kind of stuff. And they actually sent him the script. He read it. And then after reading the script, he was like, okay, this is actually pretty cool. It's a lot cooler than I thought it was going to be. So yeah, I'll do it. And so then Bryan Cranston joined the production of the film. Now, as far as filming is concerned, anytime we see the kaiju on screen, Gareth Edwards wanted to make a point of always having something else in the frame to show the scale of the monsters and show how big that they are. And basically what he wanted was, he didn't want, you know, there to just be them just walking around in a wide open area, or like, he didn't want Godzilla just swimming by himself in the water or anything like that. He always wanted something in the frame to show scale. So that's why every single time we see the Mutos or Godzilla, there's always a building in very, very close proximity so that the building is used for scale. A lot of times there were humans also in the frame. He did this because he's like, people know how big buildings are, people know how big humans are, so if I put them right next to the kaiju, it will make people realize, like, dang, these guys, these things are huge, and all of that. Another example of him doing that was whenever, after Godzilla makes his big reveal, and he's swimming through the ocean, and you see aircraft carriers and battleships swimming alongside with him. They didn't do that aerial shot just so they could be like, oh, this is a really cool shot. They did that specifically wanting to show aircraft carriers and battleships, cruisers, or whatever, right there next to him so that people would absolutely get the sense that Godzilla is freaking massive. Because everyone knows how big an aircraft carrier is. And to see one right next to Godzilla, I mean, it looks like it's a bathtub toy, just about, in this movie. So that's why he did that. Another thing that he wanted to do was, he wanted to shoot every single scene concerning the kaiju as if, he said, basically, he didn't want to do these crazy shots to where, like, it would be zoomed in on its face, or like, if it's running to the side, like, it'd be, like, you know, the camera following its face and everything. He absolutely wanted to shoot it to where, like, if someone was actually standing there holding a camera. So, basically, he wanted the kaiju scenes to be through the perspective of an onlooker. Like, that's just how he wanted it done. And the way that he said to picture it would be as if you are watching a sports broadcast or a news story. There's going to be somebody there holding a camera, shooting all of the footage that you are witnessing. And that's how he wanted his movie to look. Now, originally, they wanted this movie to be a trilogy, and for Gareth Edwards to direct all three of the films. But Edwards decided, no, I'm going to step away. This is after the movie's all said and done and over with, by the way. He wanted to step away for smaller productions. At the time of this movie coming out, I believe this was only his second, like, full-on directorial directorial film. So just the scale that he did with everything with this movie, he was like, you know, I think I'm ready to kind of just step back a little bit, you know, and focus on something a little bit smaller, some smaller productions and all of that. And so he stepped away. And so the trilogy pretty much was like, no, we're not going to do that anymore. I mean, technically, it kind of is still a trilogy, but they decided that they were going to do a shared universe instead. Fun fact, Legendary was teamed up with Warner Brothers for this film. The contract with Warner Brothers ran out, and Legendary was going to be moving over to Universal to partner up with them. Universal had ideas for a new Kong film. But because Warner Brothers currently has film rights to King Kong, if Universal was going to do it, they would have had to have leased it from Warner Brothers. Well, then someone at Warner Brothers started clicking in their head, like, wait a minute. If we've got the distribution rights for Godzilla, and we've got the distribution rights for King Kong, what are we doing? Like, we need to make this rematch happen. So they actually cut a deal with Legendary, and while Legendary is, or at the time, was doing things with Universal Pictures, they would also continue doing the MonsterVerse with Warner Brothers. And Godzilla vs. Kong, even though it didn't come out until 2021, this year, just a year after this Godzilla film came out, Godzilla vs. Kong was announced in 2015. The fourth film in the MonsterVerse was announced just a year after the first film in the franchise was released, and the other three hadn't even come out yet. Like, so that's how long we've been waiting for Godzilla vs. Kong, whenever it was announced in 2015, and then we didn't get it until 2021. So yeah, I very, very, very impatiently waited for that movie. But, you know, loved it. I love Godzilla vs. Kong, guys. And so they decided that they were going to go with a shared universe and basically try to turn this into a franchise with multiple kaiju and all of that. And like I said, where it technically still is a trilogy, because you honestly don't have to watch Kong Skull Island. It can be a standalone film. You can just watch Godzilla 2014, then 2019's King of the Monsters, and then 2021's Godzilla vs. Kong, and, you know, that's the Godzilla trilogy, pretty much. So, they had only signed a deal with Toho to do three Godzilla films. They have fulfilled that contract. As far as I know, they are still in negotiations to see what exactly is going to happen with Godzilla moving forward, and I hope that Legendary is able to keep him so that we can get more movies. But I also know that Toho they're not a big fan of having one studio release one type of Godzilla film and then they release another type of Godzilla film. So they Toho doesn't really mess with Godzilla while another production company has Godzilla, basically, and is actively releasing movies. And Toho has stated that they want to do their own shared universe like they had back in the Showa era and, you know, come up with more original Godzilla films, do solo Mothra films, Rodan films, and all of that. That's Toho's ambition that they want to do, and re-signing Godzilla to Legendary may interfere with that, so we don't really know. The good thing is, we're probably most definitely going to still get things concerning Kong, because Warner Brothers does, you know, they have the rights to Kong, and they can make as many Kong movies as they want to. They can absolutely shift the MonsterVerse into being a Kong franchise, and the last I checked, that they have stated that, you know, they have future plans, they want to do things with Kong, and it's just a rumor at this point, but that Adam Wingard, who directed Godzilla vs. Kong, is set to possibly return to helm a solo Kong movie that takes place in the Hollow Earth. And again, rumor, supposedly the working title of this film is Son of Kong. So, get ready for that, guys. Like I'm ready. So, all right, guys, now I'm just going to share a few little fun facts with you. The character of Dr. Sarazawa that is in the film, that is played by Ken Watanabe. I'm sorry, I really don't know how to pronounce his name. I'm not good with names, guys. So, yeah, everyone knows who he is. But the character of Sarazawa, his character's full name is Ishiro Sarazawa. That is in honor of the first name Ishiro of Ishiro Honda, the director of the original 1954 film, and he's directed many, many Godzilla films throughout his career before he passed. And Sarazawa, obviously, is the character in the original 1954 Godzilla, the one that had the eye patch and ultimately created the Oxygen Destroyer. So Sarazawa's character in 2014 Godzilla and 2019 King of the Monsters is a combination of both of them, Ishiro Sarazawa. Now, another little fun fact is the movie is 2 hours long. It takes 1 hour for Godzilla to make his first appearance, and he has 11 minutes of screen time. Now, that was a big complaint from people because, you know, they were like, well, we wanted to see a Godzilla movie, but he wasn't hardly in the movie. Guys, there are lots of Toho films where Godzilla only has 9 minutes of screen time, 8 minutes of screen time. This is actually, like, as far as compared to a lot of the Toho films, he had a decent amount of screen time compared to, you know, past movies. So quit your belly aching, basically. There was some backlash from some Japanese fans about the design of Godzilla because they straight up said he was too fat. And there was a lot of the American fans retaliated to that by posting anti-fat shaming comments and basically like stop making fun of him because he's fat, you know, he's just thick boned and, you know, and all that kind of stuff and everything. So yeah, that was a debate that Godzilla was too fat in the movie. Now, one thing I'm definitely going to talk about whenever it comes to this film is that I loved about it was the realism that they did. And the scene, I mentioned it towards the beginning of the episode, that is one of my favorite scenes of all time, like in just the history of movies, is whenever Godzilla is making his appearance. Like, I love this scene because, yes, Godzilla is pretty much an anti-hero in this film. He's not a full-on hero. He's not a villain. He's there to, quote-unquote, restore balance and all of that kind of stuff, which I'm going to get to that here in a second. But at the end of the day, he's a 350-tall-foot monster. So I loved that whenever he was making his appearance, when he was showing up, he created a tsunami. Like, it, you know, the water pulled back because he was coming in. Whenever he shows up, the water hits the little town. There were hundreds of people down there that were engulfed in the water and was drowning and everything else. Like, it brought a sense of realism to it, you know? Like, you think back at a lot of the Toho movies, it's like, oh, Godzilla's showing up. People are happy to see him. He's just going through the city, stomping through traffic and everything. And none of that's ever really touched on. In this movie, it was absolutely touched on that, yes, a 300-foot-tall monster that is coming from the ocean onto land is going to cause widespread destruction. He is going to cause a tsunami. People are going to die. And I like that the movie actually touched on that. never really cared for towards the end. It's one of the very few complaints I have about the movie is that after he has defeated the Mutos and he's getting up and leaving, the people are applauding him. I just don't think a mass group of people would do that. You know, I mean, we know through the narrative of the movie that Godzilla is pretty much there just to try and take out the Mutos, and then he was going to leave. Those people don't know that. All they know is that he just came up out of the water and attacked two other monsters. Who's to say what he's going to do at this point, you know? So I never really cared for, you know, everyone applauding him. And, like, at the bottom, like, when it shows the news screen and it calls him King of the Monsters, and then next to it, it's like our city's savior. Like, dude, he just had a battle royale in the middle of your city. There are literally thousands of people dead. I don't see a whole lot of people in real life being like, well, thank the Lord he was here, you know, to save us. Like, I don't see that. It's one of the very few complaints I have about the film. Now, there was a massive complaint about the movie, which I kind of somewhat have the complaint, but then I somewhat don't, of a bait and switch. Because you watch the, not the teaser video, but the original trailer that was released for the movie, and they absolutely styled this movie as if Godzilla was going to be a villain. Bryan Cranston giving his little montage that pretty much ends with, and it's going to send us back to the Stone Age. They made it seem as if he was talking about Godzilla in the trailer, whereas if after you watch the movie, you see he was actually talking about the Mutos and their ability to have EMPs and all of that. Whenever the paratroopers jump off of the plane and they're going down in the original trailer, all you see is Godzilla slowly walking through the city, making it seem as if they're going down to try and stop Godzilla from going on a rampage. Whereas in the movie, we actually get, it shows him fighting one of the Mutos. Another part of the trailer was whenever two doors were closing. In the trailer, you only see Godzilla, again, giving you the idea that he's on a rampage by himself. And then in the movie, as the doors are closing, we once again see him battling the Muto. And probably the biggest complaint, which Bryan Cranston himself has officially stated that he believes this was a mistake, and honestly, I believe that it was a mistake, was that people believed Bryan Cranston was going to be the star of this movie. And then you actually watch this movie that is 2 hours long, and Bryan Cranston has less than 30 minutes of screen time. Like, the man that they pretty much showed as being like, made everyone believe this is the main character of the movie, and he dies within the first half hour of the film. Like, that's, there was a lot of complaints with that, about it being a bait and switch. And some of the complaints I agree with, other ones I'm like, you know, whatever. I'm not going to lie, guys, I was really, really looking forward to getting villain Godzilla for this film. Because when I first saw the trailer and they led me to believe that that's what it was, that he wasn't going to be a quote-unquote savior, he wasn't there to restore balance. Like, I wanted to see him being, you know, the wrath of nature. And with an anti-atomic message. And him just going on a rampage. And if there's two other kaiju that show up and he fights them, that's fine. I wanted to see that. Like, that's why, in when I did my review of Godzilla vs. Kong, there was a lot of people that weren't very thrilled that they portrayed Godzilla as being a villain in the movie. I loved it. I loved that people were terrified of him. I loved that it showed that he was basically God of Destruction in that movie. That whenever he shows up and he's determined, I'm going to destroy this thing, you are not going to stop him. That's the version of Godzilla that I love. That's the version of Godzilla that I want to see more of. And I thought we were going to get in 2014 Godzilla, but instead we got Mr. Hopeful and Mr. Savior, and I'm here to restore balance, and I'm on the side of the good guys and the humans and everything. And, you know, while they're not necessarily complaints, and I still absolutely love the movie, God, I really wish we could have gotten the villainous Godzilla. Like, I really wish we could have. And also, I wish that Bryan Cranston was in much more of the movie than what he was. And then last little thing I'm going to share is that Akira Takarada, one of my all-time favorite actors, and he played Ogata in the original 1954 Godzilla, and then he came back and starred in numerous Godzilla sequels throughout the Showa era. He actually has a cameo appearance in this movie. However, you will not be able to see it because they got him for this movie solely so that he could be in the film, have a cameo appearance, and be like, we got the original main star of the original Godzilla film to be in our movie. And then Gareth Edwards, for whatever reason, decided to cut the scene. So you can get on YouTube and see it. If you have the DVD to Godzilla, you can watch it. But, and even Gareth Edwards has come back later and said that he regrets cutting the scene. Like, I don't get it. Like, if you're gonna get somebody with the star power like Akira Takarada has, bring him into this movie for the sole purpose of being like, you were the star of the original Godzilla film, and now I want you to be in my new Godzilla movie. Go through all that rigmarole to get him involved in it, and then when you're on the in post-production and you're on the cutting room floor, go, no, we don't need that scene. Let's just cut it. It makes zero sense to me. And, you know, I don't sue me, Gareth Edwards. It's my opinion and my opinion alone. But, boy, I would want to slap the fire out of you for doing that. But, you know, it is what it is. So, all right, guys, that does it for Godzilla 2014. This was a very long episode, much longer than I thought it would be. And yeah, so there's that. So, all right, guys, going ahead and announce the next film that I'm going to be doing a week from today at the time of this recording. I've already talked about it a lot during this episode, and quite frankly, just with the short film being released not too long ago and doing research for this film and all that, really just decided to, you know, it just made me like, you know what, yeah, let's do it. I'm gonna do that movie. I was planning on doing it later on down the road, but I've decided to go ahead and do it as my next official pick, and that is the 1971 Godzilla versus Hedorah. So, any of my Smog Monster fans out there, get ready. I'm finally touching on this cult classic, this fan favorite of the Showa era, and I can't wait to get, you know, jump fully into it. So, guys, thank you for all the support and all the love, the messages that you guys send me, the support that I've begun to get on Instagram, the support that I continue to get on Facebook. Like, thank you, thank you, thank you very much. You're keeping my podcast numbers up very, very high. Guys, I know concerning the YouTube, I said I was very close. I'm still very close. The video is recorded. I'm just being perfectly honest with you guys. I'm too chicken right now. You know, I mean, like, I'm trying to work up the courage to actually put it on YouTube, because it's one thing to do a podcast where all people can hear is my voice. It's something else entirely for people to see my mannerisms, my face, the way that I talk with my hands and all of that kind of stuff. I'm moving my hands around right now in motions while talking, and you can't even see it. It's just how I am. And, you know, I'm just not, you know, I'm too chicken for that potential backlash that I could get. But trust me, the YouTube is coming. The YouTube is coming. And, for future content, I'm getting ready to start jumping into the Ultraman franchise. I've been scooping up a lot of the old Ultraman TV shows, like on Blu-ray, some of the newer movies that are coming out. I'm really expanding the Ultraman collection. I want to be as well-versed on Ultraman as I possibly can before I actually jump into Ultraman, because I don't want to get something wrong. I don't want to mess something up or anything like that, because I know there's some diehard Ultraman fans that listen to this show. So, alrighty guys, Godzilla versus Hedorah next week. And thanks again for all the support, and we'll catch y'all next time. This is Cal the Kaiju Guy. Nope. I'm sorry, fellas. I'm not done yet. I forgot to say that I have guested on yet another episode for Kid Kong at the Movies. It will be, at the time of this recording, it's releasing tomorrow. So, November 7th. Me and Chris talk about one of our favorite movies, which is The Ghost in the Darkness, which is based on the true story of the Tsavo Man-Eaters, and it stars Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas. It's one of my favorite films of all time. I'll share the link whenever he uploads it tomorrow on November 7th, and, you know, go listen to us talk about that movie. So now, for real, I'll catch y'all next time. This is Cal the Kaiju Guy, signing out.